It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
African Union leaders seek to defuse the political crisis in Burundi. The African leadership, ending a summit in Johannesburg Monday, agreed to send military experts to Burundi to observe and offer advice to security forces as they deal with violent political protests over the president's decision to seek a controversial third term. Critics say President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision violates the two-term limit in the Constitution. Supporters insist he's eligible to run again because he was appointed by lawmakers to his first term in office and not elected by popular vote. The election has been rescheduled for July. The summit was overshadowed by Sudan President Omar al-Bashir's presence and a South African court order that he be kept from returning to his country until it decides whether he should be arrested on war crimes and genocide charges. Mr. Bashir defied the court and returned to Khartoum on Monday. The Sudanese leader has been under indictment by the International Criminal Court for alleged crimes committed during the Darfur conflict. Donald Booth is a U.S. ambassador to South Africa.
While the United States is not a party to the Rome Statute, we strongly support international efforts to hold accountable those responsible for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Those indicted by the ICC, we believe there should be cooperation of all countries to ensure that they can have their day in court.
An ICC prosecutor and the U.S. State Department both expressed disappointment in South Africa's failure to arrest Mr. Bashir. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said the authority of the ICC must be respected and its decision implemented. Sudan's information minister told VOA the president is not a criminal and attended the summit after getting assurances from President Jacob Zuma he would not be arrested. This is VOA News. The White House says a U.S. plan to deploy forces in Eastern Europe and the Baltics is still in its early stages and says it's part of a decades-old NATO mandate to protect European allies. White House spokesman Josh Earnest spoke Monday in the Obama administration's first reaction to deployment plan since it was first reported Saturday in the New York Times.
It is consistent with what we have previously indicated about the United States' commitment to fulfilling our Article 5 responsibilities and ensuring that all of our allies are committed to that agreement. You know, we want to make sure that NATO allies are defending their territory on a 24/7 basis, and we'll continue to support them and exercise vigilance in that regard.
The Times quoted unnamed U.S. officials who said the plan was aimed at countering further Russian aggression after Moscow's 2014 annexation of the Crimea Peninsula. Kenya Monday said it killed a regional commander from Somalia's al-Shabaab militant group. Crispus Mutali is the Lamu County police commander.
Among the dead was Lukman Osman Akashirwa, a key al-Shabaab commander who was in charge of the coast operations. He has been involved in many attacks against innocent Kenyans, including Mpeketoni, June 2014 attack.
That attack left more than 60 dead. Lukman Osmanisa among 11 militants and two soldiers who died when the militants attacked a military base Sunday in Kenya's northern coastal region. The United States Monday confirmed that two U.S. warplanes targeted a former North African al-Qaeda chief in Libya. Jeff Rathke is a U.S. spokesman in Washington.
What I'm able to confirm is that the target of the Saturday night strike in Libya was Mokhtar, Bel Mokhtar. He has a long history of leading terrorist activities as a member of AQIM and as the operational leader of the Al-Marabitun organization. And he maintains a personal allegiance to Al-Qaeda. So that was the target. I don't have additional details about any of the operational circumstances surrounding the strike.
Officials accused him of leading a 2013 terrorist attack on a gas facility in Algeria that killed nearly 40 people, including three Americans. Syrian monitors say Kurdish fighters seized nearly all of a major Syrian border town from Islamic State, cutting off a key militant supply route. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said Monday the Kurds control all but a few small pockets of Tal Abyad. Four Tunisian policemen and an armed Islamist were killed Monday in separate clashes. In the North African country, security forces are cracking down on armed Islamist militants since the attack in March in the Bartum Museum in Tunis when gunmen killed more than 20 foreign tourists.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union calls for a postponement of Burundi's July 15th presidential election.
The African Union has given a condition for that election to take place, and that condition is that there must be an all-inclusive dialogue among the Burundians, and subject to them reaching agreement that election can go ahead. If not, then the election should be postponed.
Erastu Muecha is the deputy chairperson of the African Union Commission. Meanwhile, the AU says it will send military experts to Burundi. The African Union launches a continental free trade area negotiations, and human rights groups in the DRC have called for the release of two activists arrested 3 months ago.
The call follows a parliamentary inquiry that found no evidence the activists of the Filimbi movement were guilty of plotting violent crimes, as authorities had alleged.
That's VOA correspondent Nick Long in Goma, the DRC. The relocation of vendors in Zimbabwe cities gets one more supporter. And eating a sweet potato helps reduce diarrhea in children by 40 to 50%. Those stories plus Mark Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The African Union has called for a postponement of Burundi's July 15th presidential election, saying a new date should be decided through negotiations between the government and opposition groups. The decision was reached at the African Union summit in South Africa. Erastus Muecha, deputy chairperson of the African Union Commission, says the decision was based on information the AU received about the crisis in Burundi, including a report from leaders of the East African community. Muecha also confirmed the African Union will send military experts to Burundi to ensure that no human rights violations have been taking place there.
The African Union has given a condition for that election to take place, and that condition is that there must be an all-inclusive dialogue among the Burundians, and subject to them reaching agreement that election can go ahead. If not, then the election should be postponed.
The reasons for the protest has been that President Pierre Nkurunziza has decided he's going to seek a third term. Does the African Union take into consideration that he should not run, or that he should run except that to push the date back?
I think the approach of the African Union has been that let the people and the institutions of Burundi solve their problem and solve it within the constitution, solve it within the laid down procedure, and they must then make sure that they create an environment and a conducive environment under which election can take place, including the issue of third term.
The other news coming out is that the African Union said it will send military experts to Burundi. Is this true?
Yes, it is. It is going to send some observers, particularly to ensure that no human rights violations take place.
Mr. Deputy Chair, let's talk about the issue of President Omar al-Bashir of Sudan and the action of the South African courts. What is the African Union position in terms of what took place in South Africa?
First of all, I should say that this was a non-event. I mean, the media make it look a huge event, but as far as the meeting was concerned, the meeting went on smoothly, unhindered and hampered by what any entity might say. Now, let me come out very clear for you to get this message. First, when a country decides to host a meeting like the African Union, you sign a host agreement. That host agreement, one of the things it does is to extend privileges and immunities to those that are attending the meeting. And for purposes of the meeting, the venue of the meeting is an extended territory of the African Union. And so President Omar Bashir was within the precinct of the African Union where he's covered by that immunity. So the court could not have had any jurisdiction in that unless the South African government remakes and does not live by the African Union statutes.
Now, the African Union, is there a particular concern about the whole issue of the International Criminal Court as it pertains to Africa?
The African Union has always said there is a decision that has been taken not to try sitting heads of, and I think this has also been wrongly interpreted, because African Union right now is trying Hissène Habré, former president of Chad. He's taken to court by the African Union because of the crimes against humanity that he committed. And so African Union does support the principles of ICC. But African Union has also given very clear stand. I mean, you cannot have double standards. You tell me which leader in will be taken to court right now by ICC. Now, those are the double standards that we have said. If indeed it is recognized that the leaders in the West can have a minute where they are seated in the office, it should be the same throughout the world.
Erastus Muecha is the deputy chairperson of the African Union Commission. He was speaking with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. The African Union has launched its continental free trade area negotiations. The talks seek to establish free movement of goods and services among African countries. Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
AU chairperson Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe launched the Continental Free Trade Area negotiations at the African Union Summit in Johannesburg.
Yeah, it's launched. I declare it launched.
Mr. Mugabe said a free trade area is essential in promoting movement of goods and people within the continent. The African Union has set 2017 for the implementation of the Free Trade Agreement. African states are expected to reduce trade barriers amongst themselves by drastically reducing export and import duties and waiving visa requirements in some cases. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta hailed the start of negotiations as a critical step towards reducing poverty and doubling the continent's economic development.
CFTA means Africa being able to be self-reliant. CFTA means the African Union meeting to discuss what to do with our prosperity as opposed to what to do with the problems that we suffer.
The Southern African Development Community, the Common Market for Eastern and Southern Africa, and the East African Community have already launched a tripartite trade agreement, and African heads of state at the summit have expressed the hope the continental negotiations will run smoothly. AU Commissioner for Trade and Industry Fatima Aksai says the continental body is aware of the challenges of negotiating such an agreement.
There are some rich resource countries, there are some landlocked countries, there are small island countries, but we know with your political will, we know with knowing the benefit of the continental free trade area, we will prevail and we will surprise the world. So the continental free trade area will happen.
Africa's growing population is estimated at 1 billion people. The continent is also known for being rich in mineral resources. But for the countries to be able to trade with each other from Cape to Cairo, billions of dollars will be required to build a strong rail and road infrastructure. Countries will also have to agree on product quality to ensure a general standard for manufacturing goods being traded. Key will be protecting countries with weaker economies from having their manufacturing industries strangled by economic giants like South Africa and Nigeria. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
More than 200 human rights organizations in the Democratic Republic of Congo are calling for the immediate release of two activists arrested 3 months ago. The call follows a parliamentary inquiry that found no evidence the activists of the Filimbi movement were guilty of plotting violent crimes, as authorities had alleged. Nick Long reports from Goma.
Fred Bauma and Yves Makwambala were among 30 pro-democracy activists and others arrested by the National Intelligence Agency March the 15th at a workshop in Kinshasa. The workshop was to launch a new platform called Filimbi, which the organisers said was to raise young people's awareness of their civic duties. Most of the activists, including a Senegalese and a Burkinabe, were released shortly afterwards. But Fred Bauma, a member of La Lucha, or the Struggle for Change, a citizens' movement based in Goma, and Yves Makwambala, a webmaster and graphic artist, have been held for 3 months without trial. They and four other Filimbi activists in exile were accused by authorities of conspiracy and terrorist activities. A coalition of 200 human rights organisations, including Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International and many Congolese groups, has issued a joint appeal for their release. Justine Masika is a spokesman for the coalition in Goma. She says they are asking Congolese authorities to free the activists immediately. According to a parliamentary report, she says they were not involved in any terrorist activities. The DRC Parliament held a debate behind closed doors Friday to discuss a parliamentary commission report on Filimbi. Activists have circulated a copy of what they say is the report, in which security services are quoted as saying there is no evidence the two detainees were plotting violent crimes. An opposition parliament member, Juvenal Manubo, says three MPs from the ruling majority also pleaded for their release. VOA contacted two of those parliament members who did not immediately confirm or deny the report. The idea of a civic awareness campaign aimed at youth appears to have been partly inspired by La Lucha, Fred Bauma's movement. One of his colleagues in La Lucha, Lucan Kalula, explains the movement's aim. He says the movement organizers set objectives, for example, to vote and allow a change of power. He says they are going to mobilize youth to vote so that a change of power will be possible. Human Rights Watch says the arrests on March 15th were part of a broader crackdown on political party leaders and others who have peacefully protested attempts to allow DRC President Joseph Kabila to stay in power beyond the constitutional two-term limit. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 16th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. One of the organizations representing vendors in Zimbabwe says it will start relocating vendors today, Tuesday, to designated vending sites, although some of the traders have vowed to resist the move. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Queen of Grace Zim Asset Trust Chief Executive Officer Ephraim Chizola told journalists that the vendors will be relocated to the western end of the city at Corner Samora Machel Avenue and Chinoy Street.
As law-abiding citizens, we call upon all members of the informal sector and vending community nationwide to support this initiative, as we believe it will go a long way in restoring order. We believe this program has come at a time when the status of our cities, towns, growth points, and service centers is in deplorable state.
Chizola said his organization has also set up a revolving fund that will assist vendors to get loans to finance their businesses.
We have since embarked on an exercise of educating our members nationwide on the advantages of supporting this timeless initiative, and would like to assure the Minister of SMEs and the Minister of Local Government that we are fully behind you and have taken a huge step in this regard by mobilizing our Harare membership to host a mega cleanup campaign.
But Samuel Wadzai, director of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, told Studio 7 that all members of his organization should resist this move. He said proper vending sites should be set up first in line with the High Court order, which compelled the government and local authorities to set up vending structures before state security agents remove them from the streets. One of the affected vendors, Gamuchira Ekuriwiri, said she will not heed the Queen of Grace Zim Asset Trust call as they are paying vending fees to council.
I think that's a very unfair move. I mean, is there anyone who's going to leave town and go downtown to buy whatever vegetables, whatever these guys were selling? No. So I think it's very unfair and inhuman. Where are the jobs they had promised us, the 2.2 million jobs? The reason why we are vending is because we don't have any form of employment.
These sentiments were also echoed by another vendor, Kudzanai Chivije, who said removing street vendors without adequate planning was tantamount to destroying their source of income.
Well, as a vendor, it's something that I won't accept. I'm a qualified technician, but I have got no access to employment, so this is the only way I can feed my family.
Harare City Council spokesperson Michael Chideme told Studio 7 that council would erect structures suitable for vending at the designated vending points in line with the court order. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Researchers have helped reduce a major health problem with a simple sweet potato, a program that helps small-scale farmers in Mozambique grow vitamin A-rich, orange-fleshed sweet potatoes, cut rates of children's diarrhea by 40 to 50%, according to a new study. It's the first time that a development program aimed at agricultural production has been shown to improve health. VOA Steve Baragona reports.
Lack of vitamin A raises the risk of serious disease and death from infections. According to the World Health Organization, 190 million young children worldwide don't get enough. Speaking by Skype, nutrition expert Anna Herforth says vitamin supplements can fix the problem, temporarily.
It's sort of a band-aid solution to a more fundamental problem, which is people not having access to high-quality diets.
So the agriculture research organization Harvest Plus wants to improve the diets of the world's rural poor by introducing staple crops that are naturally enriched in key nutrients.
If you can do something through agriculture to increase the amount of vitamin A in the diet, you're in much better shape because that's much more sustainable.
Economist Alan DeBrow at the International Food Policy Research Institute co-authored the new study in the journal World Development. His colleagues at Harvest Plus had introduced orange-fleshed sweet potatoes to Mozambique in 2006.
About 70% of kids under 5 were vitamin A deficient. So you have this huge need for new solutions.
Farmers had been planting white or yellow sweet potatoes, but they have very little vitamin A. One small orange sweet potato has a full day's supply. People in 24 villages received orange sweet potato vines, plus some training and education on how to grow them and the importance of vitamin A. At the end of the three-year study, children had 40% fewer cases of diarrhea in the villages growing orange sweet potato compared to 12 villages where they had not been introduced. Among children under 3 years old, the difference was 50%.
It's a big deal because nobody has shown in the past that an agricultural production intervention can have big health impacts, have any health impacts.
Experts are promoting the idea that teaching farmers how to grow more and better food is among the best ways to improve health.
This is an area of research that is really hot right now.
Anna Herforth was not involved with the research, but she says it does a good job making the link.
To say, you know, look, if you produce a food and it's available to people to eat and they like it and they consume it, then it does good things for health.
Harvest Plus is taking the same approach with other crops, including high vitamin A cassava in Nigeria, iron-rich millet in India, and high zinc rice in Bangladesh. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
The fight against the so-called Islamic State group and other extremist organizations is not just taking place on the ground, but also in cyberspace. There is no silver bullet to win in the web war, but this week, experts, politicians, and youth from around the world are in Paris to talk strategy. Lisa Bryan has more for VOA from the French capital.
The forum is a two-day meeting taking place at the Paris-based UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. The challenge, fighting radicalization and extremism on the internet. The response, that's not so easy, says conference organizer Boyan Radoykov.
What we can say right now is that this will be a very long-term problem to deal with. We are facing a problem that we will have to tackle for the next 20 years.
Many countries are witnessing this problem firsthand. Radical websites are mushrooming on the web, along with sites that offer young people easy pointers on how to tap them.
There are no simple solutions. You know, these people are facing a huge propaganda machinery and campaign. And we are at the heart of a system for brainwashing young people.
The UNESCO conference will look at different responses to internet radicalization around the world and also the downsides, like concerns over threats to free expression. The speakers include young people from Jordan, Syria, Libya, and Tunisia who will discuss their experiences. The battle against extremism is taking place inside and outside cyberspace. Some of the answers are coming from young people returning from jihad.
By saying, look, this is why I went to do the jihad and to meet these people, and this is why I came back. And this is sometimes even stronger than any website and any explanation that you may give when you hear from the heart of the people who lived through it.
Ultimately, Radoykov believes the fight against extremism on the net will be won. At the end, he says, reason always wins. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Ivory Coast lost 3-1 to Norway at the FIFA Women's World Cup in Moncton, Canada on Monday. Today, Tuesday, Nigeria faced the United States of America in Vancouver as Cameroon engaged Switzerland in Edmonton. Both teams require a win to advance to the knockout stage of the contest. In volleyball, hosts and defending champions Kenya dismissed Botswana in straight sets of 25-19, 25-12 and 25-18 at the Africa Women's Nations Volleyball Championships in Nairobi on Monday. Similarly, Algeria outplayed Mauritius in straight sets in the other Group A tie. In Group B, Cameroon edged Tunisia by 3-2 and Senegal pipped Morocco 3-2. Consequently, Algeria, Cameroon, Senegal and Kenya progressed to Wednesday's semi-finals. Turning to rugby, hosts Zimbabwe beat Kenya 28-20 in an Africa Rugby Division 1A men's tie in Harare on Saturday. Meanwhile, in Nairobi, a second-string Kenyan side edged Uganda 20-17 in the first leg of the men's contest in the Elgon Cup, while Kenya Lionesses and Uganda's Lady Cranes drew 5-5 in the women's contest. Turning to athletics, Ethiopian Almaz Ayana triumphed in women's 3,000 meters at the IAAF World Challenge meet in Rabat, Morocco on Sunday. What's more, her winning time of 8 minutes and 22.22 seconds is not only a meet record, but also the world's fastest time in the event this year. On the infield, Egyptian Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed prevailed in men's javelin in a meet record of 85.44 meters. Kenyan Jairus Kipchoge Birech and South African Wenda Nell won the men's 3,000-meter steeplechase and women's 400-meter hurdles, respectively. Meanwhile, Moroccans Amin El Manaoui and Abdelati Igida, along with South Africa's Kotso Mokwena, were runners-up in men's 800 meters, 1,500 meters, and long jump, respectively, while Ivory Coast's Marie-José Talou and Zambian Kabanga Mupopo placed second in women's 100 meters and 400 meters, respectively. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, June 16th.
I wish to call on the federal government of Nigeria to declare a total ban on the production and consumption of a gene, popularly known as ogogoro, that have frustrated and killed so many people in the recent days. Otherwise, many more shall soon join it. I am Prince John Michel in Bendi, Obanikwu, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. African leaders meeting at a summit in South Africa have agreed to send military experts to Burundi following weeks of violent protests there, sparked by the president's decision to run for a third term. Officials at the African Union summit say the experts will observe what is happening in Burundi and will be able to give advice to police officers. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir flew home on Monday from South Africa, defying a Pretoria court order to remain in the country until it decided whether he should be arrested on war crimes and genocide charges. Mr. Bashir, dressed in his traditional white robes, waved his cane in the air as he arrived in Khartoum and shouted, "God is greatest." That is it for this Tuesday, June 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good.
So treat yourself to that something special.